started here, folks. Happy New Year to everyone in the room. Thank you all for being here on this January morning. I welcome the opportunity to have this working group begin on the subject of Real ID. I welcome the opportunity to dispel some of the misinformation that's out there, some of the angst that's among the public. Hopefully we will just quell some of that today. I think one of the most important things to point out before we get started is that we are still 120 days from a date that hasn't even been set yet before Real ID would become a reality here in the state of Minnesota, where people would have to have it to board airplanes and to get into federal facilities, although to secure areas of federal facilities. So I want to make sure the public understands that the top priority of the legislature is to make sure that they are still able to board commercial airplanes and have access to federal facilities and nuclear facilities to those that it applies to. Not all of us in the room frequent those places, I guess. So I want to, before I get started with kind of a little bit of a brief history about Real ID, I would like to have some introductions. First of all, we have a few members that are calling in this morning, and so one of those is, well, I'll save the some of the chair comments till everyone's been introduced, but if the folks that are on the call-in want to introduce themselves, go ahead, and then we'll kind of briefly go around the table, introduce ourselves, and state, if you're a representative or a senator, state where your district is. If you're a member of the public, state that as such. If you're a representative from any of the departments or the executive branch, just let us know that too. So with that, I'm going to start to my left with my co-chair, Senator Dibble. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll reserve some kind of opening co-chair comments for after introductions, but to let everyone in the room know who I am, I'm State Senator Scott Dibble, chair of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee of the Senate, and I hail from Minneapolis, south, southwest, and downtown Minneapolis, and glad to see all of this interest here today. This is fantastic. Thank you.
I'm Suzanne Zabotka. I'm the committee administrator for Senator Dibble on the Senate Transportation and Public Safety Committee.
Bonnie Berzovsky, Senate Counsel.
And Krista Boyd, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Jamie Tencher, Chief of Staff to Governor Mark Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith. And thank you for letting me participate. Typically, Commissioner Doman would be here, and she's not able to participate today.
Good morning. I'm Carla Nelson, Senator from Senate District 26, which is Rochester, Chatfield, Dover, Yota, Stuartville, and most of Olmsted County. Serve on a number of committees in the Minnesota Senate here. This issue is very important to my constituents and all Minnesotans, so look forward to a good meeting today.
Senator Eric Pratt, I represent Scott County.
Senator Tom Saxog, represent the people of District 5. Two of those cities in that district would be Bemidji and Grand Rapids.
Senator Dave Osmek, representing District 33, Hennepin, western side of Hennepin County and Chanhassen.
Senator Dan Hall, representing Burnsville, Savage, Lakeville.
Representative Karen Clark, representing four inner city neighborhoods in South Minneapolis.
Feliz año, Happy New Year. Carlos Fariani, state representative from St. Paul, and as my relatives reminded me at the Christmas dinner table, the author of the Real ID Bill.
Senator Gary Dames, Senate District 16, which is Redwood County, Brown County, Lyon, Yellow Medicine, Lacapar, and part of Renville.
I'm Warren Lemmer, state senator from Northwest Hennepin County.
Dave Sender, Rochester, Homestead, and Dodge Counties.
Senator Lyle Coonan, I represent District 17, which includes the counties of Candy, Ohio, Swift, Chippewa, and most of Renville.
Senator Jim Carlson, Senate District 51, representing most of Egan and about a third of Burnsville.
Senator Greg Clausen, I serve the communities of Apple Valley, Rosemont, Northeast Lakeville, and Colts.
Representative Rick Hansen, Northern Dakota County, near the airport.
Representative Mike Freiberg, I'm in my second term. I represent all or parts of Crystal, Golden Valley, New Hope, and Robbinsdale.
Senator Melissa Franzen, I represent Senate District 49, Edina, West Bloomington, Eden Prairie, Minnetonka.
Yvette Hsu, member of the public from Andover.
Representative Ron Cresci, I represent the Little Falls, center part of the state, Long Prairie to Royalton. And Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, just a quick indulgence. I actually have a tour today, and so today is by coincidence, so I'd just like to do a shout-out. You'll see all the seasoned people here today, and by coincidence, I'm sure they'll be affected very much by what our decisions are. So if I could just do a welcome to them.
Welcome.
Drew Christensen, I represent Burnsville Savage.
Representative Brian Daniels, I represent District 24B, which would be Dodge, Rice, and part of Steele County.
Mary Liz Holberg, I'm here as a citizen member, not representing anybody or anything.
Tim Miller, representative of 17A, which is Swift, Chippewa, most of Renville County, and four townships in Kennewick County.
Representative Brian Johnson, District 32A, which is most of Isani County and northern Chisago County.
Good morning. Representative Cindy Pugh, House District 33B, Chanhassen, and much of the area around Lake Minnetonka.
Representative Abigail Whalen, representing District 35A, the cities of Anoka and Ramsey.
Representative Wayne Quam, Byron, and represent similar Senator Sinjum, parts of Olmsted and Dodge County.
Andrew Lee, House Fiscal Staff.
Matt Burris, House Research.
Alex Boyack, Committee Legislative Assistant.
Callie Lehman, Committee Administrator for the Civil Law and Data Practices Committee in the House.
And I'm Representative Peggy Scott. I'm the Chair of the Data Practices and Civil Law Committee. And I represent Andover, Northern Coon Rapids, and a precinct in Ramsey. And I'd like to have the folks that are online here joining us introduce themselves. Representative Smith.
Representative Dennis Smith, Maple Grove.
Very good. And Representative, also online we have Chair Tim Kelly, who's the House Chair of the Transportation Committee. Go ahead, Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Dibble. And just a brief comment. I want to thank you both for having this meeting, as evidenced by the number of people around the table and in the room. I'm sure this is a very important issue. It's one, as the Transportation Committee, we've certainly been getting a lot of questions. There is a lot of information and misinformation, I think, that has played out over the last several months, but we feel completely at ease knowing that the two of you are leading this and that we actually do have a plan going forward. So mostly I just want to thank you for your efforts today, and we look forward to this hearing today and looking forward to the plan so that we can take care of this and calm the fears of most of our constituents in the state. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kelly, Chair Kelly. Representative Urusu, are you on?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you, Chair Dibble. Representative Barb Urusu, I represent District 32A, which includes part of Hills, Mound Street, and parts of Shoreview and Spring Lake Park.
Thank you. Senator Dibble has a few comments. Go ahead.
First, Madam Chair, if I could ask my committee legislative assistant to introduce himself.
Sure.
My name is Kyle Olson. I'm Senator Dibble's legislative assistant.
Great. Thank you. You come from Moorhead.
Very good.
Everyone likes to point that out, that a Minneapolis guy's got a greater Minnesota guy working for me.
Oh, awesome.
I'm a one Minnesota person.
Yeah, you are. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
So thank you, Madam Chair. I want to recognize you and your staff for doing the yeoman's work on pulling this meeting together, but also want to thank, of course, my staff as well as council and analysts who've also done quite a bit of work in the last few days, and I look forward to the briefing and the material that they prepared that they're going to present to us in a few minutes, because as the Chief of Staff just mentioned, because of the quirk of our or the thoroughness of the law that was passed in 2009, the Department of Public Safety is constrained from interacting a lot with us up to this point. And I just wanted to echo your comments. This issue is fairly straightforward. It's not super complicated at its most basic in terms of coming into compliance or clearing the path to come into compliance with Real ID. There are some policy issues, however, that merit some consideration and some discussion. That's our task as policymakers and as leaders to consider thoroughly and do our due diligence. And so I welcome that conversation today. Just a little bit of housekeeping, and I apologize if you were going to do this, but I understand that we are going to have some public testimony, and there's a sign-in sheet at the front of the room. Or is that the back of the room? And this is, I don't know, whatever. That side of the room.
You're the testifier's table.
There's a sign-in sheet, so folks can put their names there if they want to provide some of their wisdom to those who are gathered here today. Testimony will be limited to, I understand, about 2 minutes and a grand total of about 20 minutes. We are under some time constraints. There's another meeting in this room after, so we do have to shepherd our time very well. And then, I think our task is to figure out if we can all come together around a proposal that we could handle in special session and communicate that to our leadership and the governor later on today. Is that correct?
What I would like the focus to be today is before we can move forward with anything on Real ID, the 2009 law has to be dealt with and repealed. So that's not necessarily as easy as just putting the language there and saying repealed such and such a date. There are a few more moving parts to that. So what I'd like the focus of today to be is on the repeal of that law and what that would look like. As Senator Dibble said, because that law also says that the Department of Public Safety is unable to even really talk about this because of the prohibition in that law, it's somewhat of an awkward position to be in because we don't know what the timelines are actually going to look like. We have what other states have done after they've gotten their first extension, but the fact of the matter is we can't do anything. The feds want us to repeal that law before they'll grant us an extension, and then after we get past that that hurdle, then we can talk about what the extensions are going to look like, what the timeline will look like for the Department of Public Safety. They just don't know, and we don't know what kind of a timeline it's going to take them for them to work in compliance with whatever we give them. And so that would be my hope today, is that we would focus on the repealing portion. That is the first order of business for the legislature. And I think it's important, again, to remember that we're at least 4 months away from a date that hasn't even been set yet. So are we prepared for a special session? I think probably we are, but I think at the same time, I think the Department of Homeland Security has allowed us ample time in regular session to let this go through the normal legislative process. That's where you get the best product. And a lot of times with special session, it's a predetermined deal, the legislature doesn't always have each person that represents the people of their district don't always have an opportunity to have a part of that and have a say in that. So with that, I would like to just mention a few things. As you're all aware, in 2009, at that time, Minnesota joined, I think it was at least a dozen other states that said we're not going to adopt this Real ID for a whole host of reasons. Since that time, there have been dates by the Department of Homeland Security that have been set and then pushed back. Most recently, in September 17th of this past year of 2015, the Department of Homeland Security sent a couple of their secretaries and met with several legislators and a member of the governor's staff. I think Ms. Tencher was there. They gave us a packet of information, and one of the things that was in that packet, and I believe everybody has it today, was a map, and it looks like this. And as of September 17th, 2015, it says that 28 states were not in compliance with Real ID. Okay, 28 states. So we weren't and aren't the only ones. Now, we're the only ones so far. I don't know if American Samoa has been granted an extension. But the reason we weren't granted an extension was because of the 2009 law. So, again, I want the reality of the fact that 28 states, as of September 17th of 2015, were not in compliance. Think about the practicality of that statement and the workings of Real ID. So I'm glad to work on this issue, and I'm glad that we have such wide participation here from members not only of the governor's staff, members of the public, but members of the legislature as well. So with that, I would like to have Mr. Burris. I would like you to kind of give an overview of yourself. I think you're prepared to do that. Thank you.
Members of the working committee, Madam Chair, at risk of going over some of the things that have already been touched on, I'll just briefly walk through some aspects of Real ID, the Act, and implementation in Minnesota. The Act is federal legislation. It was first a federal law, and then the U.S. Department of Homeland Security developed and adopted regulations going along with that. A lot of what we're working with is the set of regulations that occurred in 2005. And there have been a number of delays and changes over the course of the time period between then and today. And this was kind of touched on briefly, but just to give you a little bit of sense of the historical context, a number of states objected to the legislation when it was first enacted. There were concerns on a couple of different lines around civil liberties, de facto creation of a national ID card, security and control of state data, implementation costs, and so forth. And that led to the 2009 Minnesota legislation that banned both planning and implementation of the Real ID Act. Meanwhile, nationally, and as I mentioned, a number of other states enacted various types of similar prohibitions. And the U.S. Department of Homeland Security then went through its rulemaking process, which took a couple of years from the initial establishment of the Act or initial passage of the Act. And then there were some delays that occurred after that. And arguably, that can be attributed to some of the technical challenges with the electronic verification and systems changes, as well as to arguably some of the objections that various states have had. The status today was also touched on. I'll just go into a little bit more with that. As of the latest check that I did with the website for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, 23 jurisdictions are currently compliant. Another 23 are operating under an extension. And then there are 8 that either have an extension that's about to expire and is under review, or have an extension that's just about to expire. And I believe a couple of those jurisdictions are looking at legislation maybe in the next couple of days, or at least there are very active discussions because that expiration date is January 10th. And then there are 2 states that have not sought an extension or 2 jurisdictions, I should say, that haven't sought an extension and haven't been operating under that. And that's where the American Samoa and Minnesota list has come from. So the extension has been one of the mechanisms that the feds have used to give states time to implement the various requirements under the Act and regulations. And I'll just touch on some of the regulatory aspects that are present. One area is the applicant documentation and verification of identity, as well as verification of lawful presence in the United States. And that's through a couple of different mechanisms. The regulations in some cases identify specific electronic systems and agencies, and in other cases just specify more generally that certain agencies have to be verified with for as part of the application process. There are also regulations around the physical features and information on the card, around card production and storage facility, security, and then also use of these specific data systems. Overall, as also was mentioned, the basic compliance mechanism isn't a penalty to states. It's federal acceptance of state-issued driver's licenses and identification cards that aren't compliant. So in other words, if a state does not have a compliant driver's license or ID card, various federal agencies will not accept that card alone for access. And in the time frame that's occurred in the last couple of years, the Department of Homeland Security has developed a phased enforcement schedule for when a compliant ID is required. So currently, a Real ID compliance form of identification is required to access federally secured buildings. So that includes any kind of federal building where there's access control, as well as nuclear facilities, military bases. So the final phase that hasn't gone into enforcement yet is a compliant ID in order to board federally regulated commercial aircraft. And that's the piece where the 120-day window has been indicated by DHS that they'll provide before beginning that enforcement. So essentially, right now, Minnesota driver's licenses and identification cards can't be used alone to get into access-controlled federal buildings, but still can be used to get aboard aircraft. And at some point, DHS will announce the timeline for the beginning of enforcement for boarding aircraft, and they've indicated that we'll have at least a four-month window before that actually goes into effect. So that's the phased enforcement. One other, or a couple other things that I'll just touch on. One is on enhanced driver's licenses and identification cards. Enhanced licenses are a separate form of license where the documentation requirements are stricter than is required for just a regular driver's license or a regular identification card. And this was put into place a number of years ago under a separate federal initiative and can be reasonably, I think, viewed as coming out of some of the border restrictions that occurred with a passport or other form of identification becoming required to get into Canada and other, or get back from Canada, I should say. So this was an initiative that was developed largely in response to that. And Minnesota is one of the states that issues enhanced driver's licenses and identification cards. My understanding is that those cards are viewed as Real ID compliant. So if somebody holds one, they would be able to access federal facilities. And once compliant cards are required for boarding aircraft, an enhanced driver's license or identification card would be valid. Madam Chair, I could go into further details on various aspects, but hopefully that provides the working group with a general overview.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. And are you prepared to kind of say what is required to get an enhanced driver's license, what is required now for just a normal Minnesota driver's license, and what is required to get a passport? Do you happen to have that information with you? Or,
Madam Chair, I do have some of that information. It's not an easy list to convey.
Okay.
A summary is that the Minnesota driver's license or identification card has an identity verification component as part of the application documents. And that comes down to a list of primary documents and secondary documents. And the primary documents are a variety of kind of more, you might say, trusted types of identification. U.S. passport, certified birth certificate, permanent resident card, and so forth. The secondary documents are things like a social security card, a birth certificate from outside the United States, a certified marriage certificate. And so the basic structure is that a at least one primary document, or two primary documents, or one primary document and one secondary document is required. So two documents in total, at least one in the primary list. The regulations for a Real ID compliant list out a lot of similar document types that would be, you know, but it's just a single document. It's a shorter list than what Minnesota currently offers or has in its set of requirements. I don't have as strong a sense to be able to just run you through enhanced driver's license, but essentially it's a similar kind of list, but it's from multiple buckets.
Right. And so for just a standard Minnesota driver's license that we all have now, what did we have to provide for that? Mr. Burris, if you know.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
For just the standard Minnesota driver's license, the run-of-the-mill Minnesota driver's license. Or is that what you
explained?
Yeah,
so that's
what you just explained.
One primary document and either another primary or a secondary.
Okay. And the enhanced is more than that.
Yes. And I believe, I'm not sure, it might be in your packet, that there's a write-up from the Department of Public Safety on the documentation requirements.
Okay.
I could have that wrong, otherwise we could get that distributed if it's not in there.
All right, we'll look through our packet.
But the requirements include proving date of birth, full legal name, social security number, proof of photographic identity, proof of U.S. citizenship, proof of Minnesota residency. And there are lists of which documents can be provided to provide proof of each of those. And in some cases, the same document can be used to meet multiple requirements, but in other cases it's more than one document that's necessary. So, there's some complexities behind
that.
Right.
Okay, thank you. And that is this is the sheet in your packet that would give that information out. It says just the facts at the top on the left, and also on that front page, I believe, is a list of locations. Driver's license exam stations that offer the enhanced driver's license. So just so members have that for information, particularly legislators, if you're being contacted by your constituents, that's a handy list to have. We have a few member questions. Thank you, Mr. Burris, for that. And Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe this is probably directed to Mr. Burris, but I'm just, if you could explain to me on the select locations, why we only have select locations for enhanced driver's license, just the history, and what it would take to move those to all DMVs across the state. I'm assuming there might be a fiscal note, but I'm just curious to why we did that. I think I have an idea. It's probably technology and so forth, but just for the public view, why we don't have it statewide. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would prefer to ask Driver and Vehicle Services and the Department of Public Safety to answer that, but I could sort of give you my guess. The procedures are more stringent. The document storage that goes on with what's collected is more limited. Those who have access to the system and are able to actually produce, it's a central issuance, but are able to actually produce the enhanced driver's licenses is quite limited. So I suspect that it relates to some of the higher costs and kind of additional contacts points that are necessary as part of that process. But that's really a guess. So,
Representative Kreisha?
And thank you, Mr. Burris. And maybe I don't know if you're going to have the department up here to testify, but my follow-up question would be, is that cost paid for, like if that were to expand out to the areas that don't have it, is that cost borne by the state or the local counties?
Mr. Burris, you want to take a stab at that or just say that's a question for the department?
And Madam Chair, I can wait if you're going to have testifiers answered. It's just an open question.
Okay.
Senator. Just to be clear, the department and no representatives of the agency are here on the advice of legal counsel because of the language of the law, which prohibits them to even participate in planning, so they can't even hold a thought in their head around planning for implementation and compliance with Real ID.
And Representative Kreisha, we're here today just to talk about the repealer. We will get into the weeds on those kind of issues for sure. Ms. Tincher.
Sure. I believe that for the enhanced driver's license, most of the people who wanted those in Minnesota were crossing the Canadian border. So the focus was making sure that folks that in those areas had access to that. And I believe I can confirm with the department, but I think that they would be able to make that available in all drivers and vehicle service locations. There would be a fiscal cost.
And I would also add, Representative Kreischer, that the Real ID requirements require special training for all the employees. So if that's kind of where you were leading down that path, that's probably has something to do with it, too. Mr. Burris has something to add. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the working group, just one other thing I might note is, in general, the fiscal kind of structural philosophy behind driver's license issuance is that it that the costs of the driver's licenses and ID cards basically matches the operating expenditures for the department. And the enhanced driver's license is an additional $15 over the normal driver's license, an equivalent for ID cards.
Thank you for that.
So I would anticipate that would go towards some of the costs if there were an expansion.
Thank you. Senator Osmick, you were next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out, or maybe pass around if you're interested, in what during the presentation was referenced as a federal ID to get onto bases and into federal buildings. This is the actual ID. It's called a CAC, and this allows me access to Fort Snelling as well as other federal buildings. If you want to take a look at it, I can certainly pass it around.
Feel free to do so. Thank you, Senator.
And I would like it back.
Yeah.
How did he pass muster?
And who else wants to have his mug when you go in and try to get in with that shot? I know I can tease him.
That was good.
Senator Saxhawk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an additional clarification on enhanced driver's license. And should we be required to under the Real ID law, to use and would be able to use that? I know that crossing the border, international flights, you can't use the regular enhanced driver's license. I'm assuming, Mr. Birch, that we're talking about domestic flights. It would be acceptable.
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, the border crossing aspect for enhanced IDs is somewhat limited, and it doesn't include air travel, and there are only certain countries that a person holding an enhanced ID could get back into the U.S. from.
But international flights, but international, you have to have a passport anyway.
Right. So there would be other documentation for that. So yes, it would work for domestic air travel, though, as a form of identification that it appears TSA would accept.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Representative Nelson. Did you have a question?
Yeah.
Answered. Very good.
Yes. No.
Hans, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen, go ahead.
I have two questions.
My sorry.
Mr. Burris, you'd mentioned there were a couple other states that are going into session, or their regular session is starting, and they're working on problem solving on this. Could you maybe, I don't know if you mentioned those states or what they're doing. I don't know if you know that.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, the states that have a extension that is expiring January 10th are Illinois, Missouri, New Mexico, and Washington. I've only looked at this briefly, but I believe that New Mexico and Washington both have been, legislators in both those states have been discussing seeking another extension and modifying their current laws around Real ID compliance.
Representative Hansen, go ahead.
And Madam Chair, I think I'm a little disappointed that the focus of the hearing is only going to be on repeal, because I think we could work on problem solving. We've got a huge crowd of legislators here, got plenty of transparency. When I look at that list, I just think about people going to the airport and having to get that list. I got to dig up my birth certificate or my marriage license. That's a huge pain for Minnesotans. And to just talk about repeal and get into the weeds later, I'm prepared to sit here all day if we want and go through this and try to solve these problems. We need to talk about how much it's going to cost to implement this, and we need to think about the cost to Minnesotans. Time is money. The time to go and go to the DMV and get a change in your license, that's going to be very cumbersome for people. And we could work on repeal, but also solve the problem and do it in an open, logical, reasoned, transparent manner here, rather than kicking the can down the road. So I see my question for Ms. Burris was, it's happening in other states. They're sensing the urgency. I think there is urgency with this, and I would hope we can go farther than just talking about repeal.
Thank you, Senator Hanson, or Representative Hanson. I can't get your name right today. I'm sorry. We all in this room sense the urgency, but the fact of the matter is we can't do anything. We can't even estimate the cost. We can't estimate the time of what this is going to take until the bill is repealed. And that is why we're here today, is to talk about that. There's another meeting. My co-chair will be chairing that, and we will move forward with that. But we can't even have the department come and give us guesstimates of any of this because of the prohibition. We can't do anything until we repeal the law. And so that is why we're here today. Senator Limmer, I know you raised your hand. Was it to this point or another? Because I have other people on the list before you.
It might be a little different, being the Senate author of the 2009 legislation that prohibited Minnesota's involvement with Real ID, along with the House chief author, Carlos Mariani. We've missed a few details of that time in 2009 that led Minnesota to this position. And I can either expand on it briefly now or later. I'll let you make that call.
I think I'll go ahead with the people on the list before you and then come back to you if that's okay. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two kind of lines of questions that are very important for certainly what I have heard in my district and I imagine throughout the state. And the first has to do with the difference between the enhanced ID and the passport cards. So Minnesotans are well used to needing a type of identification, a certain type of identification when they travel across our nation's border. So they're either used to the passports or the passport cards if they're traveling to Canada and Mexico. But what employers in my district have been doing is they're trying to figure out what's the easiest way for them to make sure that their employees can continue to get into federal buildings, work with the NIH, do all of those things that Minnesotans do. And so some have been encouraging employees to get the federal passport cards, which are Real ID compliant, as I understand. And others have thought, well, maybe we'll get employees will get the or encourage employees to get the Real ID license, the license that is Real ID compliant, called the Enhanced Driver's License. And so my question is, and there's probably not one answer for all Minnesotans, right? Every Minnesotan probably is a little different on which of these type of documents is going to best serve their needs. But what is the difference in the documentation required for the passport card and the enhanced driver's license?
Mr. Burris? Give him a couple of seconds here to find it.
So, Madam Chair, I'll just, as a standing invitation to our own counsel and analyst, if you have the answer or you're faster on the uptake, then Mr. Burris, jump right in.
Mr. Chair, I would never claim to be faster on the uptake than Mr. Burris. I would point out, though, that in under state law in 171.068, no employer may require an employee to apply for or use an enhanced ID as a condition of employment. And
oh,
so just FYI, that's that
that was anticipated by the legislature when the enhanced driver's license was enacted.
So,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you for that clarification, and I want to clarify my comments. My comments were, how can employers help their employees get into the buildings that the employees need to get into to do their job? No one is encouraging anyone to do any particular thing, but employees are looking for information about how it is that they can continue to do the business or the pleasure or the travel that they are doing, and that there are options. And so my question really deals with what are those different requirements for some of those options that are necessary to either fly on commercial airlines or to get into federal buildings. And so that's where the question is about the difference in requirements for real ID or enhanced driver's license with real ID compliant or the passport cards. I think that's a piece that I've not been able to actually discern. I think the public needs to know that. And so that's why I'd like to get this on the record today.
Sure. Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair and Senator, I'm afraid I don't have a good comparison between those two. I do have a very high-level sense of passport requirements, but we did discuss the enhanced driver's license documentation requirements, which is pick from this list, pick from this list, and so forth.
Senator Nelson.
So it's the passport card that people really don't understand enough about what are those requirements. So maybe that if we don't have them today, but if I could ask that we do get a comparison so people are aware of the documents they need if they are choosing an enhanced driver's license or the documents that they need if they're choosing a passport card. And then my final question, Madam Chair, is a different line, but you know, the governor had asked for an extension from the feds probably maybe a month ago, and that extension was denied, but of course nothing had been done because of the ban on real ID. So, you know, one wonders maybe why there was a request. But the point is, what I think is important to know is there any time frame within which a state cannot ask for another extension? In other words, once we repeal the ban on even talking about or thinking about real ID compliance, is there anything that would prohibit Minnesota from requesting an extension as soon as the is repealed? Can we request an extension based upon this, really, I would say, a giant step towards compliance, which is repealing the ban?
And the answer to that is yes. We will. The first step is repeal. The second step is asking for that extension, because we've now repealed the law. Okay? Does that make sense?
It does. My question, Madam Chair, is, though, because there was a request for an extension just last month, is there anything that would prohibit us from asking for another extension as soon as that law is repealed?
I believe that you can ask for an extension any time.
Thank you.
And just a point of information here, when we met with the Department of Homeland Security, they said that the extensions expire every year at the end of October, and then people apply to have them renewed. So, for instance, I have documentation here from the state of Texas, because I'm like, okay, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. So I wanted to know what they did. They started in 2012 asking for extensions. They've had to ask for multiple extensions. The documentation that I've looked at in here says that they're on course. They hope to be in full compliance by the end of this year. So they're one of the states that's out there that hasn't fully complied yet, but just to let you know that this isn't something that we can pass today, pass even 2 months from now, the repeal, and in 4 months be up and ready to go with Real ID. It's a long process, but the Department of Homeland Security has allowed for these extensions. So
thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, and this is actually reading, thank you, Steph, from the letter back from Homeland Security. Minnesota may renew its extension request if there are developments or additional information provided regarding your state's progress towards meeting the outstanding requirements. Okay?
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
And, Madam Chair, I think it's reasonable to anticipate that no matter what action we take, repeal of the prohibition on compliance and kind of clearing the path to coming into full compliance, that we would need, at a minimum, somehow to work with the Department of Homeland Security, because it's not reasonable to anticipate that everyone who has a current Minnesota driver's license would be able to receive a Real ID compliant license in 120 days. That's just physically impossible. So we'll need to work with the Department of Homeland Security. I don't know if that comes in the form of an extension or just working on the implementation details with them, but to be sure, that's going to take some time, and we need to figure out the particulars around that.
Right, absolutely. And as I said, I wanted to see at least what one state has done. And if, looking through these documents from Texas, there's multiple correspondence between the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Public Safety there in Texas. So there's a lot of back and forth and working together on this issue. Senator Limmer, you're next on my list, so go ahead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of this working group. I'm glad there's such a strong interest in this. I'm sure that not everyone is here simply based on a threat from the federal government that airlines will not be boarded in Minnesota, and that's the only reason you're here, because this subject also brings in all sorts of questions about government control, the authority of federal government usurping the 10th Amendment, and also the other aspects of individual freedoms in the United States. The mood in 2009, when we passed the prohibition, some of you may recall that, and I want to correct an inaccuracy that was earlier spoken, Minnesota was the 32nd state that prohibited its involvement in Real ID as of the passage of that bill in Minnesota. 200 of our 201 legislators voted for it. And Minnesota joined the alarm in 2009 about this type of demand by the federal government. The provision that was particularly questionable was whether or not the Homeland Security was given the authority to expand the purposes of Real ID whenever they deemed appropriate. You can see that also in page 4 of the briefing page from Homeland Security dated September 17th in your packet. It's on the very bottom line of page 4. Little known and little discussed. But that too was a major concern of Minnesota legislators at that time. I think, if my memory serves me correctly, by the time the prohibition theme of legislation ended across the United States, it was closer to 40 states that wanted to prohibit Real ID from being enacted in their state. Since that time, the federal government and Homeland Security has gone one by one to the states, reminding them that they had the authority to enforce as well as coerce states into complying by threatening with residents not being able to board airlines or other federal buildings or special buildings like nuclear power plants. And so one by one, states have folded, and now we're one of the few states that are now remaining. I think it's vitally important to realize that then, as now, liberal groups as well as conservative groups had major concerns about Real ID and the threat to civil liberties. Groups such as the ACLU, along with the Cato Institute, joined in their opposition and alarm to the Real ID Act of 2005. Just for the record, that bill was passed in Congress as an amendment to an appropriations bill for the Afghanistan war funding, a bill that certainly had to pass and nearly passed with unanimous support. But the amendment was introduced at about 2:30 in the morning in Congress. There was no recorded vote of who voted for it, but that's how it got into the bill and that's how it got into law. 2005 Real ID Act has not been altered or repealed or amended, I don't believe, in any substantive way since 2005. So it's the same bill that we opposed in 2009 as a state as it is today. The only thing different is that a number of other states have preceded us in folding and complying with the government threat from Washington.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Lemmer, for reminding us of all of that. Representative Johnson, you are next.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to remind everybody here that we've gotten a little bit off topic. We've had a lot of misleading information over the past few months as well, and it's made a lot of our constituents concerned and contacted us. But we have to do this in steps. Step one, before we can do anything, is do this, do something with the current session law that bans even the departments from being here at the table to try to figure out what it's going to cost, what has to be done to implement. So I think we need to get back on track and work on this, on the issue of the current session law, so that we can get the other people that work with this stuff and understand it at this table so we can work, move forward.
Thank you, Representative Johnson, for that reminder and for helping us all keep on track. And let's do remember that that's the main reason that we're here today, is we have to repeal this law before we can ask for an extension, before we can do anything else, before we could even have the department come in and talk to us about what would be for them a foreseeable timeline that they could get back to us on how long they think it's going to take to implement this, what it's going to cost the state of Minnesota, and so forth. So let's do try to remain focused or get back focused on that, on the repeal. Representative Mariani.
Chair, members, I want to respectfully express a little bit of concern with the chair's framing of the issue, and I believe that Representative Hansen spoke to this as well. You and I sat side by side at that meeting with the federal agents, and Senator Lemmer, you were there, and perhaps a few others were there as well. And it was pretty clear to me that that the feds were sending almost a plea to our state that I interpreted as Minnesota, you don't need to undo the entire action that you took. The principled action that you took in 2009, I think was our bill. And in fact, as we pressed them in terms of how they interacted with other states, you talked about Texas, it was pretty clear that there have been steps that were being taken by several states that met the desire of the federal government to work collaboratively with us. After they initially were totally non-collaborative with us. Madam Chair, I think it's really important to acknowledge and recognize that it's rare that we pass legislation, we're not unique in this regard as a state, that's unanimous. We had a unanimous vote on the floor of the House, bipartisan vote, on the Real ID, the current law in our statutes. We had almost unanimous vote in the Senate. I think you, Senator Lemmer, I think you failed to make one phone call. but pretty darn good. And I raise that to say that, and so part of this is also just sort of feeling with you, feeling out with you, Madam Chair. When you say we can't do anything until we repeal the law, there's lots of pieces here, and I don't think the federal government needs us to repeal the law. I think the federal government is sending a signal that we need you to take some actions. I think Representative Johnson earlier spoke about steps. I think it's clear to many of us, and I know we did some feeling around here, that our DPS has instruments, has the ability to be able to take actions if we loosen the belt a bit for them to be able to do that. And it seems to me that that's really the only issue before us here today. Representative Hansen spoke to the reality on the ground, which is, we can kick this can, down the road. which I think is what we're going to wind up doing if the goal is to repeal the entire Real ID efforts here. I don't know that we get the kind of I don't think we get the critical consensus around that issue. There are some very serious legitimate data privacy issues. There are some very serious legitimate state prerogatives relative to our responsibility to be able to ensure that our roads are safe and that people managing our roads can certify to us that they can do so safely. That's not a federal responsibility. And frankly, I don't want to give up that right to do that. But there are steps that we can take, I'm convinced, that can still preserve for us that unanimous vote of concerns around those two areas. And it seems to me that that's the responsible course for us to pursue today. I don't think it's terribly complicated. And frankly, I don't think that the bar is so high with the federal government that that we need to do something as extraordinary as getting rid of the entire Real ID legislation in order for them to maybe allow our citizens to board airplanes with Minnesota driver's license. So, Madam Chair, I know I threw a lot out here. I just really want to make sure that we don't get lost in the weeds here, that we don't, in terms of some of the technical issues. I'm not a DPS commissioner. I don't work in that area. There are people there that know what they're doing. It's clear that we slammed the gate shut on them to be able to take any actions. I think we can open that gate and still preserve, as I said earlier, those concerns that produced that unanimous vote, and then continue to have this relationship with the federal government step by step, so that we are, in fact, making sure that they're not doing things with data issues that I think many of our constituents would find repugnant. So I would hope, Madam Chair, that we can at least walk out of here today with at least a broad framework of what is a reasonable step that we can take to meet a federal expectation, which I don't think is a real high one at this point, short of just throwing out the entire Real ID legislation.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, for your comments. And I think the most important thing to remember here and what you said was that there's a reason that the Department of Public Safety is not here. Senator Dibble articulated that they don't want to be here for legal reasons because they don't want to break the law that's on the books. I see that as saying our hands are tied until we repeal the bill. I don't know that we can halfway just the people around this table can say, okay, let's loosen that noose on them and let them come and say we can't do that without the legislature acting as an entire body. And I want to say again, we want to make sure that people are able to get on commercial airplanes. We want to make sure they can have the proper access to these facilities that are going to be requiring eventually a real ID, a passport, enhanced driver's license. We want to make sure that that happens. But the Department of Homeland Security has said that they will give us 120-day notice. They haven't even set the date for when that clock would start. We are getting to this, but I don't see a way around this without repealing the bill first. I don't. If you have ideas, yeah, I'm open to them. Since, if I could just add here, since the governor first talked about a possible special session for this, some members of the GOP caucus have been working together to try to come up with a solution. We came up with three different drafts. We sent one over to the governor. He didn't like the timeline on that. Well, the timeline is subject to the Department of Public Safety being able to give us the information that we need to move forward, and they can't even give us that. So we wanted to allow plenty of time. We said, that's just a placeholder. Let's move forward with what will work. What is your suggestion, Mr. Governor? What is your suggestion? I want to point out that I've been trying to be proactive on this. We've known, the governor, quite frankly, has known about this issue since he took office. Real ID has been out there. And in fact, 2 years ago, he had, the Democrats were complete control. There wasn't a sense of urgency. I understand that there is more of a sense of urgency now, and that's why we're here. We're trying to move this forward. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you have any response to that. I am more than open. If there is a solution other than the first step being repeal, I am open to that.
Madam Chair, thank you. You're being very generous with my time here. I appreciate that. I think we're probably saying the same thing. And I apologize if I misspoke. My concern had to do with making sure that in moving toward repeal, that we're not glossing over some of the concerns that led to the initial. But I think you're absolutely correct. I think we could move forward in terms of, obviously defining what repealing means. This gag order, if you will, is not helpful. You and I concur with that. And I also agree that we've been asleep at the switch too long on this issue. Part of it is that the federal government, frankly, was asleep as well. They weren't necessarily knocking on our door until quite recently.
Right.
But I do think that we can move forward with a repeal that also involves steps that we can take to be able to have a driver's license scenario in our state that meets the concerns that were present in that unanimous vote and that simultaneously can meet the concerns of the federal government. Other states have done that. My only concern is that unless we take those additional steps, then we basically have just turned over our driver's license authority completely to the federal government.
Right. Okay, thank you for that clarification. And that wasn't what I got out of the first time you spoke. So, no, I agree with you. There are still a lot of concerns, and we want to do this right. And some of the drafts that we came up with do address those concerns. And the next thing on our agenda, when we get to the bottom of member questions here shortly, is Senator Dibble is going to go over the draft legislation that he has come up with here in the last 24 hours, I guess. It's finally put on paper. And, excuse me, but the first... Well, I think we all agree the first step is repeal. Then we'll delve into that, and it could be the very next meeting that we have that we can discuss the next step. So the next person, Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And simply a question for our institutional experts, whoever they might be. Is it fair to say for those people in this room, or maybe even out in television land, if we're being televised, is it fair to say that for those people that may have a little angst, concerned about the churning of government to get all this done, that they could access a passport, and that passport would literally solve all their problems relative to access and to flying and so on? Is the passport a universal tool that they might use to at least get them through this concern that they might have at this point in time?
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Senator Senchum, the passport would work for U.S. citizens, but it would not work for other Minnesota residents who are not citizens of the United States. And that's a similar issue with enhanced driver's licenses. That those with a temporary lawful presence status of some form would not be able to get an enhanced driver's license or a passport. So it would work for some, but not all folks.
Senator Senchum.
Thank you. And to follow up then, the few persons I know that are not U.S. citizens do have passports from their own country. They would work, correct?
Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair, Senator Senchum, I believe so. I'm not positive about that. I just hadn't looked into that aspect of it. And I was, to be clear, I was referring to a U.S. issued passport.
I think that might be a question for the department, or certainly you can make a phone call and find out the answer to that. Thank you for those questions. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said that we're just discussing the repealing the prohibitions on enacting Real ID. I guess that's fine, but it seems like it might be useful to talk about things like funding for implementation. But assuming that's the case, I was just kind of confused when I was looking through the materials in our packets. There's a handout from a group called the Identity Project. It uses some fairly strong language about Real ID, saying it will enable dragnet surveillance and pre-crime profiling based on secret black box algorithms. I hadn't heard of the Identity Project, so I looked them up. Their website, you know, talks about things like the TSA requiring virtual strip searches. I mean, if we're just talking about repealing the prohibition, the handout seems kind of far afield. You know, I've heard from many of my constituents on this. They just want to be able to fly on airplanes. They're not worried so much about black box algorithms and virtual strip searches. So, I mean, it just seems like if things like this are in our handouts, it seems like we're veering a bit beyond the topic of just repealing the law. So I guess I'm just wondering how the handouts were selected.
Thank you for that question, Representative Freiberg. When this meeting was posted, it was obviously a working group for Real ID, and we had some members of the public, and this group was one of the folks that contacted us that said that they'd like to testify. And when they come to the table today, they are here today, we're going to ask them to narrow their comments to the repeal. Seeing no further member questions, I will turn it over to Senator Dibble to explain his bill. Draft.
Thank you. Madam Chair, were you planning to present a proposal as well, or and or? All right. I mean, everyone's got ideas. So if we're putting those out on the table now, it might be useful to take a look at everyone's. So, Madam Chair, I'm having passed around a document that is identified in the upper right-hand corner by the numbers SC1807-1. And I'm going to ask counsel to present it in detail, but in broad overview, it's basically calls for the repeal of the session law that prohibits compliance with Real ID on the part of the state of Minnesota. And then it tries to accomplish a couple of other policy objectives. Briefly, those are there's one thing that we need to do as well, which is to repeal the driver's licenses that are issued to senior citizens that don't expire. That is at variance with federal Real ID requirements. There's a policy concern about the fact that the Secretary of Homeland Security can deem other purposes for Real ID kind of at their whim. And so this language in here triggers some sort of review on the part of the state of Minnesota should that occur. And then finally asks for the Commissioner of Public Safety to go out and find other people's money to help pay for this. I know that there's federal grants and other sources of revenue that are available for implementation purposes. But with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Berezovsky,
yes,
who can give us maybe some more detail.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm looking at document SC1807-1. That's up in the upper right-hand corner of the document. And Senator Dibble certainly...
I'm sorry, Representative Urusso, is that you?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Is there an electronic version of that?
Senator Dibble, do you know if there's an electronic version?
Emailed it.
Madam Chair, yes, there is, and we'll email it to the members that are on the phone. We'll do that right now. Thanks.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Department of Homeland Security did a study of Minnesota's driver's license and identified out of the 43 Real ID requirements that there are about 11, I think, that Minnesota is not compliant with. The Minnesota's driver's license already has a number of the security features and other protections that the federal law requires, but there are still 11 outstanding pieces of the federal law that are not features of Minnesota's current law. So the idea behind the first two sections of this draft are to make the statutory changes that are required to meet these concerns of Department of Homeland Security. And the rest of them really are all within the province of rulemaking, and they could be dealt with by legislation, but this particular bill draft does not get into the changes in the rules that would be required to achieve full compliance with Real ID. So one of the concerns that Homeland Security expressed is that Minnesota law does not meet the federal requirement that compliant cards cannot be issued for a period exceeding 8 years. The only card that's issued in Minnesota that could exceed 8 years is the state identification card for seniors. If you're over 65 years of age, your state ID card does not expire. So Section 1, and that is statutory, so Section 1 removes the language that would allow a 65 or older individual to obtain a non-expiring ID card. Their cards would expire in 4 years, the same as other driver's licenses and ID cards. Then the federal law requires that if a driver's license or ID is limited on a temporary or limited term basis, and these are what are treated now as status check cards under our current system, where legal presence ends before the 4 year expiration. And the Real ID law requires a card that is issued to a person with temporary lawful status to expire on the last day of that individual's lawful presence, rather than just having the 4 year expiration status check date in the corner. So on 2.18 and 2.19, that provision is found, and it's an exception basically to the general rule of 4 year expiration. So those are the two statutory changes that were identified that are intended to meet Homeland Security objections. Then in Section 3, the reason for this provision is because the Real ID Act has a very broad clause in it that allows, besides the restrictions that have been discussed already on access to federal buildings and identification for boarding airplanes, that the Department of Homeland Security can also designate other official purposes for which a Real ID compliant ID would be needed. And there's no limit expressed on what those official purposes could be. So Section 3 states that before Minnesota would be bound by an expansion of the list of restricted facilities or activities, there has to be a legislative group that reviews the new restrictions and that will meet review these new restrictions before they can take effect in this state. Section 4 directs the commissioner to look for any federal or other non-state funding to pay the costs of implementation of Real ID. And Section 5 is the repealer of the prohibition against the Department of Public Safety. And that prohibition relates to implementing Real ID and planning for implementation of Real ID. Those are the only things that are restricted in the current law, and Section 5 would repeal that law.
Thank you.
Senator Nibble. So Madam Chair, I'm sensitive to the hour, A, and B, also just want to make clear that this is just an idea, and so don't necessarily want to get drawn into a whole ton of questions or debate about the I'm happy to respond to some questions. This is clearly not complete, and or there may be some real clunkers in here, so I'm totally open to that. So maybe some initial response and reaction from folks, but I'm not in a position here to defend this as the final word, and this is what I'm demanding.
Okay, right. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Any questions, Representative Johnson? Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator, I guess overall I like the concept here. It's some of the things that we need to get done, but in Section 1, Paragraph B, instead of repealing that, may I make a suggestion that you just make the length of the ID 8 years, that's the maximum allowed, and that keeps our seniors from having to buy or renew their ID every 4 years.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you. Great suggestion.
Great. Thanks. Any other questions? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along that same line, I envision, because there will always be people that object to data privacy aspects, the real ID, and may want to opt out. We presently have a dual. We've got the enhanced, and we've got, you know, ID and driver's license, and then we've got our standard. And if we, instead of deleting the senior citizens, any person that is fine with not having the enhanced or real ID compliant, we could keep that option, because there are requirements for emblems, et cetera, to identify compliant IDs, and we've got that in our enhanced. And that way, we don't have to get rid of this for senior citizens or add an expiration date of 8 years. And so that I like the idea of the dual, so you can opt out for privacy or other reasons and maintain our current system. And I think that might save money and complexities for our citizens.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Dibble. You want to respond?
So Madam Chair, I do know that the Department of Homeland Security has been very clear, and some other states have actually opted for this kind of dual track, so folks could opt for the kind of ID that they want, and they're very clear that there's no barrier or prohibition to states doing that. And I do know for a fact it's been the fodder of a lot of rich discussion among the part of Senator Lemmer and Representative Mariani and others. And so that's a kind of super complicated conversation, but it's somewhat involved, and that's not present here, but I'm very open to that idea. And I'll just say for the record, if that's something that we can achieve easily for the purposes of special session, I'm wide open to that. It may be hard, though, so that remains to be seen.
Thank you. Senator Lemmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On this point, I received a letter dated October 5th of 2015 from the Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security, Phil McNamara. He was the representative at the meeting that we were at on September 17th. And I'd asked him about the two-tier system and whether or not it could be deemed as compliant with Real ID. His quote is, "Per your request, compliance with the Real ID Act is compatible with a two-tier option where residents can choose between receiving a compliant license or a non-compliant license." So at least from the side of the end of Washington, looking at this type of method, they're okay with it. And he gives plenty of other comments and history of how other states have complied with that model. So that is an option that we can consider, and if council needs a copy of my letter, I'm anxious to give it to them.
Thank you, Senator Lemmer. Senate Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that the Real ID Act actually does provide for a second tier. So it is in the federal law and in the regulations that there are details as to, you know, what the card would look like and so on. So it is not only contemplated by the law, but it's actually provided for in the law.
Thank you for that clarification. Also passed out was a draft of a bill that our working group in the House came up with, and it was amended yesterday to address the concerns of the governor with the dates. And so, Council, would you want to run through that real quickly, please?
Madam Chair and members of the working group, so the bill draft distributed is coded in the upper right, MB132, and this has two sections. The first section establishes that the Commissioner of Public Safety can perform planning activities related to Real ID, but cannot actually implement any of the requirements of the Act. And this section also creates a reporting requirement that would be due by March 8th of this year, so at the beginning of the regular session. And it specifies information that would be part of that legislative report. So a review of findings, provisions under the Real ID Act where Minnesota isn't compliant, along with some background information, any anticipated rulemaking, any guidance information that the feds had provided, as well as an estimate of costs and any recommendations for legislative changes. And then Section 2 of this bill draft has the repealer of the current law. So, in effect, this approach would allow for planning, create a reporting requirement, but keep the implementation ban in place until a subsequent law were enacted in the future.
Right, until the legislature can act. So, we've got one more draft here that was just handed to me. Representative Hansen, looks like you had something drafted yesterday.
Yes, and they have copies. I think there's more copies coming.
Ed, if you want to explain what you have there.
I think it's important. Well, first off, it's got an opt-out in it, so Representative Quam and I could get together on that, and maybe he could sponsor it. And I think an opt-out is important for folks, and the precedent is there in other states, as was mentioned. But I also think it's important that regular Minnesotans don't have to pay a price for this legislative inaction. I think it's important that Minnesotans are going to have to spend time upgrading their licenses, but they shouldn't have to spend money, and that we should use the existing surplus to cover the costs of upgrading those licenses. Secondly, we haven't talked much about implementation, and we don't know the actual cost, but there are going to be deputy registers, there's going to be public safety that's going to probably have to staff up to deal with the deluge of people who need to get into compliance. So I think it's important, and I've made my point earlier, that I think we should work on problem solving now, because I think Minnesotans aren't going to be sitting in a line to go to the airport wondering, gosh, I dug up my birth certificate or I dug up my passport and I'm really worried about the 10th Amendment right now while I'm standing in line. They want to be able to fly, and I think they understand that time is money and their time is important. And if we can cover those costs and facilitate this transition when it happens, I think that can show that Minnesota government can work for Minnesotans again, rather than having an additional cost that is a burden to them. So it's in the bill, and there should be additional copies coming. So.
Right. Thank you for getting
Madam
that.
Chair.
Where did that come from? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to see Representative Hansen's bill on this, but I would wholeheartedly object to all Minnesotans paying for this type of effort. As I've previously shown you, I don't need it to fly. There's a lot of citizens that already have passports. This is a requirement that was sent to us by the federal government. This is not a requirement that the state of Minnesota imposed upon its citizens, that if you want to have the enhanced and you don't want to have to bring your passport, that should be a convenience for you, and that should be something that's borne by you. If there are some additional setup costs, I think that may be something that may be something for discussion purposes. But I strongly object to imposing this upon the entire base, particularly on individuals in Minnesota that don't need the enhanced, and they'll be paying for it by the general fund or by the surplus. So I guess I would have very strong objections. Also, Senator Dibble used the magic word special session. I'm curious to see where we are going from this group, if this is going to trigger a special session, if Senator Dibble or the chair, at one point in time when we find out, when we end this discussion, where we're going with next steps.
Thank you for those comments. Representative Russo, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to that last comment, one of my concerns with regard to that is that I recently went and took a group of people and we applied to the enhanced license. And in addition to the $15 upcharge for that, which we expected, they were also required to pay the charge for replacing their license. And so perhaps we could have a compromise between the state putting the entire bill and the state putting none of the bill for people and work out a way to waive the license replacement fee if people have to go apply for the enhanced license. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I will just add, too, in the research that we've done, that what is happening in most states is that what they're doing is when your license expires, if they've passed Real ID, they just, when you get a renewal, then you get the Real ID. It's not something where everybody's going to be rushing to the DMV at the same time. It's going to be, hopefully, you know, it's going to be a situation where it's just going to be when you're renewing your license anyway. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, I don't believe that that department's actually offering that enhanced driver's license. I know by word of mouth of personal experiences that people who are coming to renew their licenses because it's their birthday and it's regular expiration date, they haven't been offered that option, and some Minnesotans don't know this is still an issue. So what can we do for that to be happening at least at that level? Because that doesn't really take any legislative action. It's just it's not being offered even though it's an option. People don't know about it.
Yes, the Department of Public Safety, it's at their behest to, they need to be the ones explaining to people when they come in, you know, would you like an enhanced driver's license? For sure, and I think maybe, it seems like we've addressed that before with them in a, like, the data practices subcommittee hearing. I don't remember, but it seems like we've addressed that. Senator Claflin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comment just relates to a comment you made a few minutes ago that why couldn't we have the Real ID compliance coincide with the five-year renewal of our existing license. Now, this might require a waiver from the federal government, but it's something I think we should pursue so that we don't create undue, unnecessary issues for citizens in renewing those licenses.
Thank you. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, and I want to respond to the comments of Representative Hansen on the 10th Amendment. I know what we have here, and we have a bit of a convenience issue where people are concerned about their travel and that. But let's not set aside the fact that we as representatives have a job. They may be standing in line not thinking about the 10th Amendment. That's why they've elected us. And we need to have that conversation. We need to walk that line, and we need to get there. We don't need to come down here and just say, we're going to fix this, or we're going to spin everybody up in a frenzy. We need to have those conversations. That's why we're here. And it's going to take some time. We have rights and responsibilities to the people that we serve. And as we know, this process isn't always quick and it's not always enjoyable, but it's very, very important. So, Representative Hansen, I understand where you're at and I understand what we're trying to do. Let's not make light of this and just say to our constituents, hey, we're just going to get this done so you can travel, because our real job is let's get this done to protect you, because that's why you sent us down here. And that means thinking about what it means for you when you're standing in line, that are we protecting the best we can your rights and responsibilities. So I hope we don't just sweep that under the rug. I hope we don't just come down here and say, let's allow you to travel to Arizona to see your grandkids. Because more importantly, let's allow you to have the rights and responsibilities and liberties that we fought for to get here. And let's not just sweep that under the rug because you're worried about getting on an airplane. So I just wanted to offer that up.
Thank you, Representative Crescia. Ms. Tincher, I believe you've passed out something from the governor's office. Is that correct?
Sure.
Go ahead. Thank you. And then we're going to have to move on to public testimony. So go ahead and explain.
So this is just simply language that would authorize the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety to become in compliance with Real ID. So it's just our very simple way. There you go.
Thank you very much. Representative Ariane,
Madam Chair, could I just respond to the question? I believe it's my understanding that the Department of Public Safety is only, the infrastructure exists for enhanced driver's license only in certain locations where you get a driver's license. And so it is not that they are not offering it everywhere. They would be happy to do that. It would just be that there would be some infrastructure and some things that we'd have to do that.
Thank you for that clarification. One more question, and then we're going to move on to public testimony. Representative Mariani.
Mindful of the time, I'll be very quick. Just a very quick comment. Obviously, we're working through. We've got several pieces of language before us. I just want to make a plug at this point for acting on what we know the issues are, mm-hmm. and it seems to me that Representative Hansen's draft, its language, is probably the one that's most on point in that, in terms of being able to create some options for us. And it does seem to me that having legislation or having language that moves forward that basically tells in the form of that report, the DPS, hey, listen, you can't do anything until you bring back to us later, you know, what this all looks like, I think sets us up for a potentially protracted battle down the line. And to Representative Hansen's earlier point, doesn't meet the expectations of folks who want us to act right now. Again, we were very clear several years ago what some of the major issues are. There is a mechanism in some of the language before us that allows us to get at that, and I would encourage us to pursue that track as opposed to this kind of consistent reporting back before anything happens. That's not going to get people on airplanes quicker. The options piece will.
Thank you for those comments.
My two cents.
Thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. We are going to go ahead and move on to the public testimony portion. First on the agenda is Edward Hasbrock, consultant to the Identity Project. On deck, Ben Feist, and after him, Bentley Graves. And then we'll move to anyone that's signed up to testify. So, Mr. Hasbrock. Thank you for being here, and if you could keep your comments to 2 minutes and try to narrow them to the repeal, that would be great. Go ahead and have a seat at the table. Welcome.
Thank you.
And go ahead and introduce yourself for the tape, and we'll move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Edward Hasbrook with the Identity Project, paperspliese.org, a national civil liberties project which for more than a decade has focused on government ID demands and on the right to travel. We're concerned that the DHS is misleading this legislature and the public about what the Real ID Act does and doesn't require. To highlight briefly 3 points in our written statement. First, it is about the database, not the card. The DHS has tried to downplay or deny this, but the plain language of the Real ID Act requires compliant states to grant access to their entire state ID database, including information about anybody who opts for a non-compliant ID card, to every other state for any purpose whatsoever, effectively creating a distributed national ID database. Second, ID is not and will not be required to travel. Before you capitulate to DHS threats, ask them to show you what law requires air travelers to show ID and what court has upheld such a requirement. They can't because there is none. The DHS itself has said this repeatedly in court, and in fact, people fly without any ID every day. Third, travel is a right guaranteed by federal law, by the Bill of Rights, and by international treaties. Any attempt to impose a new ID requirement for air travel would be vigorously litigated and, we believe, overturned. Concretely, rather than agreeing to plug Minnesota into the National Real ID Data Hub or committing to do that, we encourage you to maintain your commitment against the Real ID Act by A, preparing to intervene in defense of any Minnesotan whose right to travel is violated by federal agents, and B, working with your congressional delegation to get the Real ID Act repealed by Congress, as it will have to be if state legislatures like yours stand firm and maintain the commitment that you properly made so many years ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this testifier? Thank you so much. Oh, Senator Senjum.
Just briefly, I'm not sure I heard you correctly, but did you travel out here without an ID?
Not this time, no.
Pardon me?
Not this time, no.
Okay.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Feist with the ACLU. And Bentley Graves, if you could be ready on deck. Go ahead, Mr. Feist. Introduce yourself to the tape.
Madam Chair, members of the working group, my name is Ben Feist. I'm the legislative director for the ACLU of Minnesota. For those of you who are not used to seeing me up here, the ACLU is a nonpartisan nonprofit group dedicated to protecting the civil liberties of Minnesotans under the U.S. and Minnesota constitutions. So I'll start out by, and I'll keep this very brief today, but I'll start out by saying that we did support the prohibition back in 2009 very seriously, and a lot of those issues still remain. That said, I'm very pleased with the conversations that I've been hearing today with this working group, trying to tackle the issues and find a way to move this forward. Our original opposition was really that this could create a national ID card and tracking system. The system could also be exploited by the private sector to invade privacy. And there could be a host of practical problems at DMVs in terms of documentation and who would be able to eventually get access. I believe that this opposition in the state of Minnesota and the 32 other states that pushed back on DHS at that time was quite successful in delaying and at least limiting what we saw as the bad effects of the law. I understand that under DHS implementing regulations, currently birth certificates and street addresses do not need to be verified with the issuing agency, which was one of our big concerns. And there is no requirement under those regulations that states interconnect via databases to share license information between the states. However, that is still in the Real ID Act, which I will add the ACLU still believes should be repealed by Congress for a number of reasons. The opposition that we had previously also created delays in implementation and enforcement that has allowed for a certain amount of experimentation among the states, and I think that has created a benefit. We do remain very concerned that implementing documentation requirements will disproportionately affect the poor, elderly, and people of color in Minnesota. So I hope that these issues continue to be addressed. Full compliance would be very problematic, but I believe that what's really being required of the states by DHS is something far short of what is in the Real ID Act itself. And again, I hope that what we're trying to do here is really find the minimal reasonable requirements that the state of Minnesota can put in place here and not push for 100% compliance with the Act, especially since it appears that a number of the so-called compliant states do not have anything close to full compliance. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions at this time.
Any questions for Mr. Feist? Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate that. As the next testifier comes forward, I do have a question for Ms. Tincher. The draft that you presented, is it your understanding if that was passed by the legislature that that would be enough for us to have an extension granted?
Based on my conversations with the Department of Homeland Security, I believe that that is accurate.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graves. Go ahead and state your name, who you're with, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, which is an organization that represents 2,300 businesses statewide and about 500,000 employees. First of all, I want to thank you for the work that's been done thus far to both raise the profile of this issue, but also to bring it to the point here where there are, you know, serious discussions about addressing Minnesota's noncompliance. The reason this is an issue for us is because we've heard consistently from a number of our members their concerns, not just about their employees being able to board flights in the future, but a number of them have already come up against issues with their employees entering federal facilities and carrying out the responsibilities that they have as employees as things stand now. So we fully support efforts to bring Minnesota into compliance so that we can both avoid what's coming down the pike with flights, but also to address the issues that employers in Minnesota are already facing with their employees as a result of our noncompliance. So I also want to just really briefly just bring your attention to a letter that was included in your packets by Doug Loon, who's the president of the chamber. And thank you again for your efforts and the time and effort and energy that you're spending on this issue. And I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Any questions for Mr. Graves? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Graves, we've had some discussion about
nuclear facilities and federal sites, but I'm wondering about the airport and in terms of commerce, APHIS, which is the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, inspecting produce and products that come in and go out of the state. I mean, those are federal actions that are taken to make sure that our agriculture and our nursery industry and our outdoor industry is protected from invasive species and other things. So is it your understanding that that prohibition on federal building entering or working at the airport would also apply with APHIS and some of the other things, that that certification and checking that's needed to make sure that we can have commerce with some of those products is not impacted or could be impacted?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would certainly defer to experts on this, but it is my understanding that, that for those federal facilities that do require identification, it is not possible now to enter or gain access to those facilities with a Minnesota driver's license or ID. And so I would defer to those who know better than I what the exact specifics are.
Representative Hansen.
And just to close the loop, that's why it's important, if it affects the whole economy, our whole commerce, that the general fund is an appropriate use to cover this cost and bring us back into normal functioning with our economy.
I'm guessing Mr. Graves probably doesn't want to respond to that. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And very quickly, Mr. Graves, so a little bit kind of piggybacking on Representative Hansen's thing. Questions. So does the Chamber feel that we should be acting sooner or later relative to these issues?
Mr. Graves.
Madam Chair, Representative, our view is that this should be addressed as soon as possible. It's our understanding that this group is gathered here today to try and identify a path forward if there is a special session, and that certainly would begin work on this sooner rather than later. That's something we support. Ultimately, again, this is something that our members are already experiencing with their employees and certainly will in the future. And so, you know, again, as soon as possible what we hope will take place.
Thank you. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This relates to Representative Hansen's question. I don't know. It's probably better directed at one of our nonpartisan staff, though. Are you able to say what type of federal, I'm just wondering, I don't know if there's a list of federal buildings that require this sort of identification. This is going to sound like I'm place dropping here, but I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday, I'll just say at a fairly significant federal building. And knowing that this was the case, I brought, I have a passport card as well as a passport, so I brought that with me just to make sure I could gain admittance. I did gain admittance with it, but somebody else from Minnesota was with me, and they just had their, as far as I could tell, non-enhanced Minnesota driver's license, and they were able to get in. I'm just, but I guess maybe it's possible it was enhanced, and I just wasn't aware of it, too. So I'm just wondering which buildings are affected by this.
Mr. Burris, do you happen to know?
Madam Chair, Representative Freiberg, I'm sorry, I don't have a full list. I do have a sheet that I could pass around that's from a PowerPoint that identifies a couple of examples. This is New York, the Jacob J. Javits Federal Building in Boston, John F. Kennedy Federal Building. So I don't, probably if it says federal building, and you know, that's likely. A couple things, though, that I would note about that. One is that the provisions of the law are around those facilities where there's access control in the first place. So it's not any federal building or facility. Smithsonian Institution is an example where, you know, identification and access control, at least to, you know, go look at the exhibits, is not necessary. And so a real ID compliant license or ID card isn't necessary there. But so far, I have not found a comprehensive list.
There was tight security requiring identification in the particular building I was in, so for what that's worth.
Great. Thank you for that question. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bentley, I'm wondering if you can further elaborate on the Chamber's position regarding the timeliness of this issue. I realize we all realize that we need a repeal, we need to, you know, bring our head out of the sand, so to speak, and actually make sure that commerce and Minnesotans can continue to travel specifically. But my question is, there's kind of this push-pull here. We're going to be in session within 60 days. So a regular session will take place 60 days from today. Or there's a special session, which could come, you know, a few weeks earlier than that. And my question has to do with the efficacy of actually getting it, getting the ban repealed a few weeks earlier via a special session. But maybe the trade-off is the fact that we know how special sessions work. Those are kind of not quite as transparent. Sometimes they're not as thorough. And I think what we're seeing here from the from the ban from 2009 is, you know, we just had, this is a very complex issue. It always is, I think, when you deal with the feds particularly. But we have to be so very careful about unintended consequences. And so has the chamber really taken a position on whether this should be dealt with within the next few weeks at a special session, or whether it would be better dealt with during a regular session with the full transparency and hearings and such, right at the beginning of session? So can you clarify the chamber's thoughts on commerce regarding that issue, please?
Madam Chair, Senator, as I said before, with members of ours who are already facing issues with Minnesota's noncompliance, this is an issue that we would like to see resolved as soon as possible. This isn't just about flights, although that will be a significant problem as well down the road, but this is something that is already causing issues for employers in Minnesota. To the question of the special session, again, it's our understanding that this group was called together to take up this issue as part of the larger discussion about special session. I don't think the chamber has a specific position as to whether or not there ought to be a special session. There are other pieces of that conversation beyond Real ID as well. Our role here today is simply knowing that this issue was being raised as a part of the special session, as a part of the issue, as a part of the effort to get Minnesota compliant. We wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to come and share the business community's view, and to make sure that those involved in this conversation know that this isn't just, again, about flights 120 days down the road. This is something that is impacting Minnesota employers now, and to urge that we find a solution as soon as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. And time is running out. We do have a hard stop at noon because there's another group coming in here. Senator Osmick, thank you for taking your name off. I do want to get to a member of the public. Mary Liz Holberg has some comments or a question.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just add this as a thinking point. It's not about special session or not, but I think the issue is that it is about the database. Okay, and so in reviewing these proposed bills, I think Representative Hansen at least touches on it a little bit, but whether or not there's a two-tier or three-tier system, to the degree that you can put in controls with audit trails, access, storage around the data, that's one way that you can begin to protect the information. Whether it's a regular license, an enhanced license, or a Real ID compliant. And so I think some time spent around to be able to figure out how can you lock down information as tightly as possible and still comply with what the feds want, in my mind, provides the greatest privacy protections for the residents of Minnesota, and where we would have some opportunity to spend some time and make a difference if you just in turn say turn over this authority and, you know, well, if you want to have this kind of ID, you know, we'll be compliant with the feds and let it just go at that. I think you lose an opportunity to assert some state rights with this information and protect it no matter what level of driver's license an individual would obtain.
Thank you for that. And one of the drafts that our small working group did come up with contained language like that, similar to what was in the LPR language last time, that creates audit trails and really tries to hone in on the safety and security of the data, because that is something that is very important in this discussion, and one of the reasons that the 2009 legislature voted the way that it did is over those kind of privacy concerns. So thank you for that. Just a few closing comments. The drafts that were presented here today will be on the civil law website. So for members of the public, that if you didn't get that, certainly you can go to that website and get those drafts. It's on the main house website, I'm being told, to get there. Okay. I think everybody in this room probably knows how to get there. thank you for the discussion today. I have a feeling that we'll be coming back to this issue, and the gavel will be in the senator's hands. And I want to thank everybody here for good questions and trying to keep the discussion focused today. And I believe we're moving forward on this. And I guess I just let my co-chair have some closing comments as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll, if you prefer to go to the Senate website, we'll post we'll post these drafts out there as well. I will just confirm your comments that what our task now is to report back to our respective leadership, and I know that Chief of Staff is going to report to the governor. I know the governor is looking for some sort of decision by tomorrow to be made between himself and the Speaker and the Majority Leader about whether or not a special session is advisable or possible. Unless I hear differently from those gathered around this table, it feels like we could get there fairly easily on this subject, and so I'm going to report affirmatively to my leader that whether we do simply a narrow repeal and request some planning and a report back, or maybe even take care of some policy objectives along the lines of what Senator Limmer, Mariani, Hansen, and Prisha and others have discussed. I don't think it's complicated, and I think we could probably come to some mutual agreement either on a narrow, detailed bill or a slightly larger bill. That's my sense. But I'm, of course, open to advice. The conversation that I'm scheduled to have with my leadership isn't until this evening, so everyone knows where to find me.
Thank you for your closing comments, Senator Dibble. And I will also be reporting back to my leadership. Are we prepared for special session? I don't know. I'm going to talk to my members that were here today to see if they think that we're ready, if one of these drafts could be tweaked adequately enough to make that first step. So I appreciate, again, everyone being here and your participation. And with that, we are adjourned.